Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Today, we have a very special guest that needs no introduction, Roberto Orsi, Executive Vice President of Strategic Growth at Captura Group. Welcome, Roberto.
Thank you, Mario. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, so glad to have you on. I believe, you know, most of our listeners know you from your time at Acento Advertising. Would love to kind of kick things off by giving us some history. You've seen a lot of change, and I was really excited to see you, the announcement with Captura Group. Kind of going to just jump right in. What has led you to come back into multicultural marketing at this time, and kind of orient us on how things have changed from your time at Acento to now?
Well, I think my career has been defined by interesting changes. I started off as a client in Mexico working for Procter & Gamble, and then I went into advertising. And shortly after being in Ogilvy, Mexico, I was sent to Canada, where I worked in general market, which was English, and also segment marketing, which was the French-Canadian. So I was able to do different kinds of work in two cultures. And then went to the U.S., where I worked in the general market. And then I transitioned from general market to the Hispanic market when I joined my brother, Hector Orsi, and his wife, Norma Orsi, at La Agencia de Orsi. So I've always enjoyed different iterations of Roberto. And I had a fantastic time at Acento, great agency, great people, great clients. And I recently came to Captura Group because of what they're doing is as far as being digital first. You know, the digital today is such an important aspect of marketing in terms of channels. However, Captura Group has been doing it for 20 years, and I thought this is a really interesting, different change for me. We did plenty of it at Acento, but Captura Group has a long history of it, so this is a good time for me.
And, you know, I love that about Captura as well, because I think, you know, us as a research agency, that's how we started, was digital first. And a lot of it was that, you know, there was this idea of the digital divide, which was a real thing in the 90s, but for whatever reason, it persisted in market research well beyond, you know, the closing of that digital divide, so to speak. I mean, that was closed pretty quickly with the advent of mobile. I think market research was a little bit slow to adapt to mobile. But now the opposite of the digital divide is happening, right? I mean, especially if we look at Latinos, we're outpacing anything digital in terms of adoption. So, I would love to hear your perspective. What does digital first mean? Why is it important, and how is it, you know, how do we approach it, not only digital first, but from a cultural perspective, which I think Captura Group does really well.
Well, you touched on it. I mean, the digital divide is gone, and now it's really a digital leg up. And it makes perfect sense if you think about it, because with Hispanics being such an important part of millennials, and even a greater part of Gen Z, and even a greater part of births, Hispanics are mostly mobile, and it affects everything. It affects how they interact in e-commerce, in social media, in entertainment. I was interested to see recently that e-commerce, which you would think, especially after COVID or post-COVID, you would think that that the general market is more e-commerce driven, but Hispanics tend to over-index in e-commerce. And if you look at it, it's not just specific chains, but e-commerce in general. And it makes perfect sense. They're busy. They're having to work. Sometimes have less time for shopping, and they're dealing with a lot of things at the same time. They're also larger families, so they may need e-commerce across more categories than you would expect the general market to use. So it's a very good time, and Captuta Group has been very active in that and very present. And what's interesting about e-commerce is that people think about it just as a transaction, but cultural nuance is critical in anything you do. When we saw a big shift into performance marketing, where everything had to have a return on investment based on what you did online, I think there was for a while there, people were forgetting the importance of culture. And you really do need to combine performance marketing with cultural marketing to be more effective moving forward.
Yeah, and you actually touched on, a report that we did recently that touched on something so interesting. It's intuitive once I talk about the data point, but it's that culture part that you're talking about. Yes, Latinos over-index in e-commerce. We dug into this phenomenon of family members, typically younger, English dominant, bilingual, purchasing things for their older family members that want a product or know about a product. They hear about it, through WhatsApp. Maybe they see it on TV. They don't feel as comfortable navigating the internet, whether that's a language barrier, whether that's just, comfortable with technology. But we found almost 70% of millennials purchase something on behalf of a family member. And that's where that culture part comes in, right? Because that purchase, buying for somebody, especially an older relative, is so different. And it points to a lot of things. I mean, in terms of the collectivist nature of Latinos, but it also points to there's so much e-commerce transactions happening online that aren't captured by analytics, right? A purchase like that on behalf of a Spanish dominant family member, you would think, look, we don't have to invest in in-language digital marketing because they're purchasing our products. But they're missing the fact that there's a lot of research being done prior to that, likely in Spanish. And just because they didn't actually purchase it doesn't mean that messaging was missed. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. In fact, if you go back to the 90s, we would say that the younger family members were translating for the parents. Today, we call digital Sherpas. They're guiding the family in the digital space, and in many cases, representing them. We've seen that too, and that's really what I find interesting about that, Mario, is that it talks to a bigger issue, and that is the importance of culture. If you think about young Hispanics, so many of them are born in the U.S. now. And one of the big misconceptions about the Hispanic market is that as a result of that being born in the U.S., that they're assimilating, they're leaving their culture behind, that you can reach them in English, as you said. But that is very far from the case, because even though they're bilingual, and in some cases they might be primarily English speakers, their cultural is very strong. And the family aspect of culture is particularly strong. So you can't pretend or ignore the fact that you don't need Hispanic marketing to reach them, whether it's in Spanish or in English, because general market advertising does not resonate with somebody, even though they're English speakers, if it doesn't resonate culturally.
I agree 100%, and I'm going to get philosophical here with my next question, because it's something I've thought about, and I think given your multinational experience, I would love to hear your perspective on it. So what is it about Latinos in the US that this kind of this idea of Latino culture persists beyond first, second, and third generation, unlike other immigrant groups like, let's say, the Irish or German? I mean, and I'm not saying that there aren't Irish Americans or German Americans that are proud of their heritage and still have, you know, cultural ties, but I definitely think it's diminished over time. And yet we're not seeing that to that extent among Latinos. What from your perspective is different in those two groups? What's going on?
Well, I'll give you a general market parallel. So I lived in Texas for many years. I worked there, I studied there. And one thing I noticed about Texas is that Texas has a very strong culture. And the smart brands that were marketing in Texas were doing it very much in culture. It's the Lone Star State. So you'd see Lone Star advertising and Lone Star beer, and they would feature classic Texas personas in the advertising. And it really resonated, and there was pride in being Texan and marketing to Texans and using Texan themes. And that culture, the Texas culture, is all around them. If you look at the Hispanic market, we have larger families, we have multi-generational families. Our culture, whether you are English or Spanish speaking, is all around you. So it doesn't go away like it did for the Irish, for the Germans, to a lesser extent, the Italians. They quickly assimilated because they were far from home. There was no going back and forth to Italy or Germany or Ireland as you can today with the Latinos who can go across the border, or the border crosses them and their family members visit them here. Our culture is all around us in the same way that the Texan culture is all around Texans. So it stands to reason that it's that retroculturation happens, even if you kind of moved away from it for some reason as you were in your teens. This happens quite often. It's all around us and it's refreshed constantly.
I agree with that 100%. You captured that much better than I would say, because I think one of the main differences I point to is a proximity.
Yes.
Right.
Big point. And that's a big point.
And I think another thing that I've been kind of mulling around, which is in line with our digital conversation, is that, you know, what the large Hispanic immigration happened late 80s, early 90s, right? Mm-hmm. Continued to happen. And it happened at the same time as the rise of the internet. And now you have the ability to connect with culture on an even deeper level, right? Contact with family members is free, easy, instantaneous. But then you also have the ability to read newspapers from Latin America, to stay in contact with news, consume content. Even myself who I was, you know, I was born here. I'm 1.5 generation. And I consume content, you know, via memes and videos that of novellas from my childhood that my parents watched that I would have completely forgot if not for the internet, right? I feel like there's something with that going on as well. Like the internet has created this portal to our culture where we're able to stay connected, unlike other immigrants groups in the past that they're so far disconnected, not only geographically, but there wasn't the internet and a way to keep in touch with what was happening in their home country.
Yes. Well, I have a WhatsApp on my phone, and I talk to my sisters and other relatives in Mexico all the time. It's like having text or FaceTime here in the U.S. with locals. It is so easy to stay in contact.
For sure. Shifting gears a bit, you know, we're talking about culture, cultural fluency. You know, there's been a big, I don't know what the word is, I guess, refocus, you know, which is weird to say, right? Both you and I have focused a good majority of our careers in this. But now, you know, given the events that happened in 2020, there's a whole new focus around cultural fluency. And it's particularly salient during these times. Can you share with us what cultural fluency means and how brands can become more culturally fluent as we start to see this refocus, kind of re-energizing and understanding diverse consumers?
Yes. Let me take a couple of steps back, though. And that is if you recall, a few years ago, Hispanic marketing was in a silo. You had Hispanic marketing teams, and then the general market teams did their stuff, and we did our stuff. And for a while, that worked pretty well, except that there was the brands were not always integrated. Everybody was doing their own thing. Then what followed was an attempt at integration, and what it became was essentially doing a common denominator for everybody. So you had either advertising that had a few brown faces in it in the general market, which supposedly was reaching us, or the same spot was voice was done as a Spanish voiceover and run in Spanish media. And the objective was to have one brand. It's a lofty objective, but that wasn't the right way to do it. And so for several years now, Hispanic marketing, I think, was stagnating. And it recently started to accelerate. And I'll tell you one of the key factors behind that. The ANA, which represents most of U.S. advertisers, at the end of 2017 formed a group called AIM, Alliance for Inclusive and Multicultural Marketing. I was a founding member and was very active in it. And what our mission was to essentially provide a new way forward to doing segment marketing. Because what we saw was that brands were actually starting to lose revenue and were not doing as well as they could have. And a big part of it was that they were losing multicultural consumers, which were a big part. I mean, 40% of millennials are multicultural. That's a huge market that they were missing. So 2018, 2019, and 2020, the move to segment marketing accelerated because we had more research that demonstrated that if you were doing it right, you were not winning. We've been working with some of the major measurement firms to do more accurate and representative measurement. And now we're starting to see a big shift. And so, you know, some of the big brands like McDonald's, like Walmart, like Frito-Lay, like Pepsi, like Wells Fargo, like Kellogg's have really accelerated what they're doing in the Hispanic market. And what happened in 2020, which is George Floyd and a lot of things that we're seeing now, even helped accelerate it even further. It raised the awareness of the importance of the segments and their unique needs. And I think we're starting to see a shift back to Hispanic marketing and African-American marketing and Asian marketing and LGBTQ marketing.
Yeah, that's That's really interesting. You know, I didn't think about how the efforts of AIM dovetailed with this shift, because I think you're pointing to when you talked about, you know, this string of you know, one insight being pulled for everybody. I mean, was this whole idea of total market, right? Which was a point of discussion for so many years among multicultural marketers and marketers in general. But it sounds like, I think what you're pointing to is that hopefully, well, one, that we realize that total market really was a mistake, and that's being bore out through data. And two, that multicultural marketing really should be marketing, right? Because when we talk about, I mean, you pointed to how Latinos, African-American, Asians are such a large portion of millennials. When you talk about Gen Z, the first minority majority generation, when you look at who's driving birth in this country, it's all multicultural, right? I mean, I feel like companies like Captura are uniquely poised to be the marketing firm. I mean, should we start talking about multicultural marketing just as marketing, or we're not there yet?
Most of us do call it just plain marketing, and at least this, you know, many of the smart ones, but sometimes because people assume it means you're a market, a lot of us are quick to say segment. That, by the way, the total market concept, when it first came up, it was meant to be the sum. Total market was a sum of marketing to all segments and recognizing that there are differences. But it got co-opted and became generic marketing. So it wasn't meant to be that. So what AIM did was essentially just walk away from it and say, you know, that marketing or modern marketing essentially is looking at all your segments, identifying which have the greatest volume opportunity and targeting those, irrespective of language, irrespective of segment. It's like, which ones are they, and go after them. And in most cases, it'll include segments. It rarely would it not include it.
I like that idea of segment marketing. I mean, that's a term that we use in market research, and it's just kind of, it's a more data-driven approach, right? Because
yes,
it's not necessarily all about ethnicity. That's a huge portion, as we've discussed. You know, the way that I like to think of ethnicity, or I explain it to clients or people that want to know a little bit more, like, about what multicultural or segment marketing means, is that race and ethnicity is the closest proxy for culture that we have.
Yes.
Right. I mean, when you talk about Latino, there's so much that comes with that. It could be language. It could be, like, we're talking about collectivist nature. And that's something that's applicable to African Americans and Asians as well. So ultimately we're talking about culture. About culture, and there's an intersection there that I think is going to be really interesting, is, you know, intersectionality, meaning Latino gamers, right? The gaming is a whole culture. How does your ethnic culture influence how you see yourself as a gamer, or African American? African American gamers, or, you know, I don't know. I just think it's you know, we're uniquely poised to kind of lead this next wave of marketing, which I guess leads me to my next question. You know, it's exciting times for the industry that we're in. I'm curious, from an agency perspective, are you seeing an actual shift in terms of investment to more segment marketing, or was there kind of this renewed energy in 2020? This, you know, I know there was a lot of movement. And are things petering off, or do you see this as a real paradigm shift in terms of brands and companies having a sustained investment over time to understand these segments that we're talking about?
I think most of us in the Hispanic market are seeing a real shift in 2021, and more interest in Hispanic marketing and Hispanic segment. And we hope that it goes beyond the interest because of the political correctness and just trying to do something that's community driven as opposed to market driven. And it really takes only one small shift for marketers. And that is when you insert the data and the research that you're talking about. In the past, brands would develop a strategy, and they would then, in the execution stage, say, how much should we set aside for segments, if at all? And what the shift is, you do the segment analysis while you're developing your strategy, not after, because that'll tell you that when you're doing it, that X percent of your volume is going to come from this segment, Y from that segment. And then you do your marketing plans based on that intelligence, not as an afterthought. Should we do something in Spanish? Well, let's see. Let's look at the numbers. You have to look at it up front because you may be driven much more by segments than you know. So I do think that is a shift that is happening. I think it's real. And when I talk to my other agency friends and people that are part of Hispanic Marketing Council, people who are part of AIM, and they're seeing it too. And they're seeing it a much more heightened interest in this market.
I love that answer, because my follow-up was going to be, you know, how do we sustain this investment beyond kind of what we think companies should do? And your answer really is leading with the data, right? Because while the community aspect, the messaging is important in terms of inclusivity and diversity, ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, it's a revenue thing, and the numbers speak for themselves. So I like this idea, obviously, right, of leading with data, because
if you like numbers, I have a number for you. It's 3.5 times. So one of the tools that AIM developed is called CIM, Cultural Inclusive Index Measure. And I give a lot of credit to Carlos Santiago, who's the head of Santiago Solutions Group research firm, and also one of my partners in CIM and AIM, and a longtime friend. So there is a test called CIM, and you measure the effectiveness of your advertising. And it could be digital or traditional. And what it gives you, the traditional things that advertising measures gives you, you know, how strong is the brand, purchase intent, all those things, whether they liked it, whether they didn't like it. But it layers on top of that cultural inclusion index. How did the brand address the culture of the target consumer? And this CIM score is for white, non-Hispanic, African-American, Asian, LGBTQ, Hispanic, English-speaking, Spanish-speaking. It looks at all the segments, and it tells you that this spot was or was not in top first, second, third, or fourth quartiles in terms of feeling your culture reflected. And what we learned was, after thousands of tests, and since we started in 2019 testing and piloting, we have found that if your spot or your marketing, if your piece of advertising is in the top quartile, it is 3.5 times stronger in purchase intent. So it stands to reason, why would you do something that does not reflect culture and have it work a quarter as well as a spot that does reflect culture and works 3.5 times stronger. It just makes no sense. The other thing is there was follow-up research, which is attribution. Did this piece of advertising lead to a sale? And this was using the brand's and marketer's own data. And we found that doing an analysis that 40% of the purchase decision was tied to the advertising, which is huge because there's so many factors that affect purchase, price, distribution, availability, everything. And 40% was tied to the advertising effectiveness, which is huge. So if you're a marketer, those two numbers, and there's more obviously, but just those two numbers alone are enough to drive you to do the right kind of advertising and marketing for your brands, regardless of the segment. Look at all of them, not just Hispanic, look at all of them.
I love that because part of this podcast, part of the intent is to help marketers that either this is their first foray into segment marketing or, you know, they've built a career around this. And that's what our listeners tend to split into those two groups. Mm-hmm. But those are very actionable, 3.5 times, 40%, too easy to remember numbers that you can really use, right, to advocate to do cultural marketing. To do yes. In cultural marketing, it's extremely important. And I think for everyone listening, big fan of Carlos Santiago and his work and the AIM group that are going beyond just we should be doing and giving you some data to really, arm you with some data to help you advocate on doing culturally fluent marketing.
Absolutely. That's one of the great things about that AIM has done. And every year, more and more marketers sign up for AIM. It's like a separate, it's like a culturally nuanced A&A. And there's many, many brands that are in there. Walmart, Costco, McDonald's, Target. I mean, the list goes on of how many companies are doing the right thing now, and not the right thing politically, the right things for their businesses.
Yeah, which is an important distinction to make. Closing us out here, again, you joined Captura Group. I think it's been a couple months.
Yes.
Before we close out, tell us more with what you're charged with at Captura Group. What does Vice President of Strategic Growth mean?
Essentially, it's built on what Captura has done over its 20-year history in terms of capabilities. What additional things can we do? What marketing, and it doesn't have to be all Captura, it can be marketing partners. What marketing partners can we work with to give our clients better service? One of them is just an obvious one is working with other segment agencies in an integrated fashion. It's working across channels. It's for example, in influencer marketing, there's so much happening in influencer marketing, and there's platforms that give us a lot of information. And there's emerging platforms that haven't even come out yet. I'm an advisory board member of one company, a startup, that has some artificial intelligence that goes way beyond traditional artificial intelligence and influencer marketing. So how do we leverage those platforms for our clients? It's also working with our team members and staff. How can we continue to add team members that will add to our capabilities and make our strategic growth possible? So it's giving our clients better service by giving better service and just being better marketers.
That's great.
Simple job.
No, yeah, simple, right? Yeah.
Well, you know, it's made easy by having, you know, the art founder, Lee Van, who's just fantastic to work with. And Lee, a year and a half ago, hired Walter Boza as president. And we have tremendous strategists that work with us and creative teams and media teams. So it is easy. It's building on something that's already working very well.
Yeah, it's true. I've been working with Lee and Jennifer Woods.
Yes.
With the research perspective, there's a fantastic team, and they're lucky to have you. And I appreciate you coming on the podcast, telling us what you're up to. For listeners that want to connect with you online, Roberto, what's the best way to find you?
Easy, roberto@capturagroup.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining, and thank you everybody, Mario, for listening.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.